can't afford.
Meeting will come to order.
That's crazy.
Wait, one.
Move more. Come on.
Mr. Hagan and Representative Winchesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, we are continuing on, as you know, with the department's bill. I'm not sure who's joining me now. At some point, we heard a number of members raise different objections or concerns about part of the department's bill yesterday, and so I do want to do another amendment today to take out those provisions, so we can do that with a quorum. But I have met with Representative Silver members, and I did want to change my motion to move that the bill pass and be referred to Ways and Means, and hoping that we're going to complete the bill today. So, Madam Chair, if it's all right with you, then if we could just continue to hear from the Department of Revenue. I believe we were on, I don't know if it was Article 4.
We were on Section 25.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Lance DeRica with the Department of Revenue. And I'm sorry, did you say 24?
23.
John,
I
don't know. We did.
According
to my
recollection. Oh, okay. I'm on page 13, Section 25, but.
Yeah. 25 and 26 have to do with provisions dealing with assessors, licensed assessors, and the Board of Assessors, and we covered that on Monday. Moving on to Section 27.
Okay.
If there are any questions. 27 has to do with Green Acres. It removes some transitional provisions that were enacted in 1983 and 1997. Section 28 is a slight change to existing law, providing that property may be entitled to a valuation adjustment reduction based on conservation easements. Sections 29, 46, and 49 have to do with value notices, notices of proposed property taxes, and property tax statements. The language that's being added would allow the counties to send these out upon written application by the interested party by email or by putting an electronic form of the notice in an envelope and mailing that out. This would be effective for things done in 2007 and thereafter. Sections 30 and 31 are changing references to January 1st with regard to assessments and reassessments. They don't actually take place on January 1st, so the references are changed to the assessment day or January 2nd, as the case may be. Excuse me. Section 32 has to do with the homesteads and the homestead applications and activities related to that. It makes clear that the occupying spouse of an owner or the occupying spouse of an owner's relative has to provide their Social Security number on the application, and then that the county provide those same Social Security numbers along with the other Social Security numbers that it already provides us on data files.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me, Representative Sobel.
Can I ask a question on that, sir? Does that mean that everyone has right now just, let's say, my Social Security on file, then does all the spouses now have to then change their application? We're going to have all kinds of changes in applications for this one, for this provision?
Madam Chair, Representative, my understanding is that we ask for these Social Security numbers already, and this, I'm not aware of anybody that's complained about that or hasn't provided it, but this clarifies the law. There's so many, I don't want to go off here too far, but editorializing too much on my own, but there's so many people that can claim a homestead now, the owner, the spouse's owner, the relative, and so forth. We just, this was kind of a gap in the law.
Well, Madam Chair, I understand if it's probably done already, if it's done already. I'm just asking if it, is there, are there lots of records where the homestead is going to be denied because of both of them not being on, or is it, has it been the practice in the past and you're just clarifying the law?
We're just clarifying the law to current practices.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Madam Chair, if I may,
sure.
I'm just letting the department know here that in my next amendment, I do want to delete the next sections 33 and 34. There are members who brought concerns to my attention, and so we had stated at the outset yesterday that anybody who had a concern, we would just take it out. In that office amendment, we'll also address some of the issues that Representative Liebling and Representative De La Forest spoke with me about. So I don't want to use the committee time to go through sections 33 and 34 because my intent is just to remove them.
Thank you.
With the committee's permission, with the committee and the author's permission, section 34 also makes a change for property held in trust where it's rented to an authorized farming entity and actively farmed by a member of that entity who is a grandchild of the trust grantor. Maybe we can work with the committee to keep that part of it in. That would make it consistent with the other actively farming provisions that allow a grandchild of the owner to be the active farmer. Section 35, I understand, is going to be taken out by amendment. Section 36 is affected by an amendment, taking out the changes having to do with resorts, but there is also a change in Section 36 that accommodates something the department is doing in a separate bill. This has to do with the homesteads for blind and disabled persons. They have to file an application. The law change here just says the person has to have an application that was approved either by the commissioner or by the county assessor. Right now, the Department of Revenue does this and approves the applications. Our proposal in a separate bill is that this would be done by the counties. So this just says the person can have it approved by either one. Doesn't harm anything now, but it allows for the other change. Section 37, again, has two things in it. One is being amended out. The changes having to do with resorts is being amended out, but there's also a change in here to eliminate the unused property tax classification for certain indoor metropolitan fitness, health, social, or recreational properties. Section 38 has to do with disparity reduction credit, and it changes a population parameter for cities that are adjacent to qualifying cities.
I'm Harriet Sims with the Department of Revenue. Sections 39, 40, 41, and 42 all deal with which utility values are to be provided to the counties by order and which are to be recommended. And this is intended as an amendment to clarify that whenever the statute says that the values are listed and assessed by the commissioner, that the commissioner would provide those values by an order. And whenever it doesn't say that in some of those statutes, that those values would be recommended, and this is what our current practice has been. Section 43 would prohibit members of the local boards from acting on their own appeals, and Section 44 does the same thing for county boards. Section
45. Excuse me. Representative De La Forest.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for missing. I just had a brief question about Section 43 and what the penalty is or how that's cross-referenced with Chapter 10.07 regarding conflicts of interest and things like that. I don't have an objection at all to this. I think it's good law. I'm just curious how this might interact at all because members of who are covered under 10.07 may also fall under this.
Representative, Madam Chair, we think that this was meant just to fill in a gap because there was no place actually in these statutes that specifically prohibited these members from acting on their own appeals. We think they certainly would be covered by Chapter 10. There isn't, at least in here, a specific cross-reference, though.
Okay.
Maybe, Madam Chair, just something to think about going for. I think it's a good law. I think it might get confusing, though, with the interplay. And, of course, I'm interested always in trying to give good guidance to our local elected officials when we put laws on them. Thank you.
Madam Chair. And I think that's good. I agree that what Representative De La Force is raising, and I was sort of looking at Mr. Michael, and everyone was looking quizzically as to how that might all come together. I don't think we have the right House researcher in the room to answer that question specifically, but if there's something we can change or make better, or for some reason you look at it further and continue to object to a piece, we can take it out before we get to Ways and Means too, because I think you want this to happen, but you don't want it to make the law more complicated.
Madam Chair, Representative Winchester, no, I don't have any specific quarrel with it. I think it's something perhaps we can have Mr. Michael or somebody look at offline. I don't have any big objection. It's just one of those things that if we can solve it now as opposed to creating problems for the League of Minnesota Cities and others down the road, can help. But no, I don't have any objection. It's a good piece of legislation.
Thank you. Section 45 requires specific training for county boards of appeal and equalization. Last session or the session before, this same type of training was required for local boards, and this would just provide the same for county boards.
Section 46 was mentioned earlier. Section
and 46.
47 was mentioned earlier. On a legally check. Section 48 has to do with special taxing districts and the certification of their levies, and states if they are newly organized, or provides that if they're newly organized or if their boundaries have changed, they have to notify the county auditor of either of those facts by July 1 in order to levy consistent with that in the current year. Section 50 and 51 have to do with partial payments of current year property taxes, and just provides that they are, according to what is a pretty common rule, that it applies to the oldest obligation first. My understanding is that sections 52 through 55 are amended out. Section 56 has to do with the senior citizen property tax deferral program. Some people have found that there might be some questions about the priority of the state's position when participants in the program are hold a life estate or are the purchasers of the property under a contract for deed. There could possibly be some risk, some small risk, to the state to recover all of its money in those two situations. So we're suggesting that you consider, and we have proposed, that those people would no longer be able to be new applicants in the program.
Madam Chair, I want to ask a question of Mr. Michael, if I might, because Representative Mueller is not in the room, and I think he'd be asking a question right now. Representative Mr. Michael, the issue that was just raised in Section 56, knowing what, and Representative Mullery has mentioned to me, he's contemplated some tax changes in this area. Do you see a problem with this provision, with some of the things Representative Mullery is working on? I hate to proceed today and have him miss this opportunity.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Lincheski, I don't think that this would have an effect on that, because this essentially just is disqualifying people with life estates and some other instances from participating in the program. So I don't think so. I could talk to him, but I...
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, this is a naive question. I mean, under present time, they're able to participate. I thought that the reason for this section was to clarify that when there is a death, or that the state is first in line to get the back taxes that are owed the state. This seems to say that they're ineligible from here on. Are you accomplishing two things here in this particular section?
Madam Chair, Representative Silver, with all not trying to be cute here, I think you put your finger on the question, on the issue. There are people in the program, we've identified these two categories, where it's not clear that the state's lien would be the first. We would be behind the owner of the remainder portion and may not be able to collect our taxes. So the question becomes, do you trump those other people with a law change and say, you know, and then you differentiate between people who are already in the program and say they are second, but if you're new, for new people, the state's lien is first, and that, there's questions on both sides. You would be affecting people who held the remainder person, or you would be affecting people who were selling property on contract. The other choice is, because it's not a better choice by far. I mean, there's no, we don't sit here and say it's a better choice, but we went the other direction to keep these people from getting into the program. Number one, our thinking was, for people purchasing the property on a contract for deed, there's not, we haven't run into any of those. We don't think there are any of those, and we don't predict that there would be very many of those people trying to get in the program. You have to have owned the property for 15 years. So if you're buying it on a contract, it just, we haven't seen those kind of people. We've seen, I think, I know one, there might be two or three people in the program with a life estate. And as I said, you kind of put your finger on the issue. It's a choice. It's a policy choice.
Madam Chair, there's two things. One, that we can change the odds so that we are first on it. I mean, that's a clarification I thought you were saying, that you, in this section, you wanted to do. And then secondly, to prohibit anybody else in that situation from entering again. I don't know as if we had a discussion on the second part. Give me some justification for that. That's more than just the technical. That's a policy change.
There's been another question here, Representative Martin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess in light of Representative Solberg's questions and Representative Lincheski bringing that up, and we are going to be looking at the property tax senior deferral program, that if we could set this aside for the time being and we can maybe clarify some of these things as we develop the property tax relief bill, if that would be all right with the author of the bill.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'll add that to my office amendment today.
Thank you.
Sections 57 through 61 deal with these. This all deal with the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act. These are technical and more or less housekeeping changes. The first one deals with property that was in the Missouri Forest Program and comes out of that program. In that statute, which is in Chapter 88, there's some language there that references the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act and states that that land then would be automatically eligible. And this section just cross-references that section and states what owners need to do in order to generate a payment, and specifically states that, for instance, they would need to notify us, because otherwise we wouldn't know of this land. We were aware of one potential situation. We don't think it occurs very often, but that's what that language is all about in Section 57. Sections 58, 60, and 61 all deal with the administrative procedures for appeals. The meat of this is in Section 61, which sets out what the specific appeal rights are and how appeals are conducted. This language is pretty much from Chapter 270C35, which deals with appeals generally in tax and taxpayer situations. The language has been tweaked a little bit so that it refers to a claimant rather than a taxpayer, and it doesn't refer to claims for refund. And the other two sections that are amended are conforming sections to that. We are not in here, in all of this language, not taking away any appeal rights that a claimant would ordinarily have. We're clarifying, and I think in one case, allowing them an additional 30 days for an extension that they wouldn't have already had under the current statute. And the last section that's being amended
here. Okay, excuse me. We have a question here. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the department, the language is being stricken in Section 60. I think that's what you're saying is being replaced and set forth elsewhere, either in Section 61 or maybe it picks up those appeal rights in 290C13. Is that the case? I mean, we're deleting some language that sets forth some appeal rights. I just want to, I want some confirmation that, and I think you said it, that we're not taking away any appeal rights that currently exist. We're just basically putting the language in another part of the statute.
Representative and Madam Chair, that is exactly correct. If you'll see that the language in section that's been stricken in Section 60 states that the appeal must be in writing and will be within 60 days, and we've got 60 days to rule on it, and that they may go to tax court at the end of that period, or 120 days if we have not acted on it. And you will find in Section 61 that is the specifically in Subdivision 4, you'll see the 60-day requirement. We have some more administrative requirements that they have to, give us their name and address and say what the claim is about. And then in Subdivision 6 there, we do have the determination language, and Subdivision 8 deals with the appeal to the tax court, which is actually also dealt part of that language that was stricken in Section 60 then comes back in Subdivision 8. So they would retain, their 60 days after we deny an appeal, or within 120 days if we don't do anything, then they may appeal to tax court, and that is exactly the same.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Ms. Sims, please continue.
And the last section of this that is amended is in Section 59, we are amending 290C05 because that language refers to a one-year waiting period for receiving a payment, and we're clarifying that only applies to the first person that files a claim, because in an amendment last session, we clarified that if somebody purchases land that's already in the program, they wouldn't have to, wait out that one-year waiting period in order to receive a payment.
Madam Chair, the last item in Article 4 that I don't think we've talked about is Section 62, Paragraph C. We are eliminating a section that allows the county treasurer to abate property tax penalty amounts, which come about if you're late with your payment. What we're not touching, what's left in law, is a provision that allows the county auditor and the county treasurer, if they agree, to abate those amounts. To be effective the day following final enactment.
How about if they're one in the same office? Do they be with each within myself?
Madam Chair, Representative, we found that in most cases that is true. I've been asked to mention Section 3 of Article 5. Section 3 of Article 5 changes the procedure for paying supplemental Firefighter Relief Association benefits. For many years, these amounts have been paid to the municipality. Excuse me. Since about 1997, there's been a requirement that the municipality hold the payment until certain financial reports have been filed for the main payments of police and fire aids. The supplemental, we've started paying the supplemental payments that way in 2003. to the municipality, and the municipality holds payment until certain financial reports are filed. This would conform the law to that practice. It would be effective for payments this year. There are no questions. I think someone else is going to speak to sections 1 and 2.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Haugen from the Department of Revenue. I'll be going over the last article, sections 1 and 2. The first section deals with tax refunds. Generally, when a taxpayer claims a refund, we send the refund out to the taxpayer's name and we send it to the taxpayer. There are certain exceptions. We do revenue recapture for state agencies and for fines and things like that. There, if there's a revenue recapture claim in, we will send the check to the claimant agency. For the education credit, there is a way to assign your refund to somebody that quotes you the money to get education benefits. But those are the only situations where we don't send a refund to the taxpayer. We do periodically have situations where a creditor of a taxpayer will try to levy against the property tax, or against the refund we're going to be sending out. So we get into the position where we say, no, we won't honor that levy. And with the theory of sovereign immunity, we do that on a uniform basis. What this provision would do, it would put something in the law that we could point to that would say, no, we can't honor your levy against this refund that the taxpayer has claimed. If you want a levy, you can levy against the bank account that it goes into, but we can't send you the check in your name because you're a general creditor. So that's section one. Section two deals with tax preparers. I think it was 2 years ago or last year, we put in a provision where if we have a tax preparer who is convicted of fraudulently preparing Minnesota income tax returns or property tax refunds, we can put on our website, and you know, if they're criminally convicted, it's going to be public data anyway. We can put that preparer on a list on the department website saying that this tax preparer was convicted of tax fraud. We'd like to expand that to tax preparers where they have willfully prepared at least two returns that are totally incorrect. Right now, I think where we've assessed this penalty, which would get you onto the list, in the last 3 years, we've probably assessed 12 preparers this penalty.
Madam Chair,
Representative Solman,
would you give me some additional comfort on this? Are you assessing a new fee of $1,000?
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, this isn't a new penalty. The penalty is already there.
Okay.
This is, if we do assess, let's say, a preparer, three of they've prepared three returns that were willfully incorrect. In other words, they made up a Schedule C for the individual, or they made up a couple dependents, and we can show that it was the tax preparer's idea. Then we can assess this $500 penalty. That's current law. What this says is that if we've assessed this preparer enough of these penalties, we can put them on a list on the department website saying that these, in effect, are bad preparers and you probably shouldn't be going to these people.
Madam Chair, the first part of your statement said the current law says you can put them on there if they're convicted, right?
Criminally convicted.
Oh. Well,
this is just a civil penalty where criminally you'd have to prove beyond reasonable doubt that they actually... They were part of the fraudulent scheme to file this tax return.
Oh.
Willful, the burden of proof is a lot less.
Madam Chair, what is the level of penalty for a conviction? Is it a misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, felony, what?
Madam Chair, Representative Goldberg, I'd have to check, but I think it's, depending on the amount of the refund involved, it might vary.
Excuse me, we have someone else that wants to jump in here. Representative Coles.
Well, I guess if Representative Solberg is done, I
just trying to understand. One of my concerns all the time is that we have a separation of power, and if the court determines that I'm guilty of something, that's a court, and I have my day in court. When you have administrative penalties, then you don't have a day in court, and all of a sudden you could have administrative penalties. and some other action taken. I've always been on the Judiciary Committee long enough to be concerned about just the administrative penalties. So that's all my concern about.
Mr. Hagan.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, the way that when this penalty is assessed, we assess the $500, we do a tax order. The tax preparer then has administrative appeal rights where he can come into the Department of Revenue and say, well, no, I really didn't willfully prepare this return wrong, but the taxpayer gave me the wrong information and I believed him. And that wouldn't be willful. So he could get off at that on that level. If after his administrative appeal he still isn't satisfied or he doesn't want to bother with the administrative appeal, he can appeal that assessment of penalty to tax court and have his day in court that way. So I think for all of these penalties, the tax preparer does have his due process rights to get off the penalty and not get on the list.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, to that point. Madam Chair.
Representative Winchesky.
I just think for clarification it might help before we further pursue this issue to ask Mr. Michael for a little history. My recollection is that this provision, and members of the Tax Committee may remember, this was Representative Thiessen's bill. It had the support of the Legal Aid Society and the Minnesota Society for the CPAs. I'm not sure how it traveled or what happened, and maybe I'm not thinking of the right bill, but Mr. Michael, if you could comment for the Tax Committee members' reference point as to what this provision was attempting to do and what happened with it.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, your memory is correct that Representative Thiessen did carry the bill, and I don't remember the year exactly in which the sort of the regulation of tax preparers was enacted. It may have been, I think it was 05 in the 2005 session. And as Mr. Haugen explained, one of the sanctions is sort of the publication of these, of, you know, the preparers' names who've been subject to the, you know, to the criminal penalties. And so that's the history. There were changes, I believe, that were made last year that modified some of the requirements, again, carried by Representative Thiessen. I guess one issue with this language, as I look at it, when it says assessed penalties, it's not clear to me whether that means that those penalties have gone through all of these administrative appeals or whether that just means the commissioner has assessed it. To get back to Representative Solberg's point, it might be that you'd want to clarify that to make it sure that they are, you know, it's that these have already gone through all of those administrative appeals and are final in essence, rather than that the commissioner simply has assessed two of the penalties.
Mr. Haynes?
Madam Chair, I think if you look at some of the subsequent subdivisions to what we're changing, there it does give more or less the idea that you have to have had, you know, you're more or less exhausted your appeal the appeal remedies for whatever penalty we were taking into account. So I think there wouldn't really be any need for clarification.
Representative Collins, do you want to proceed?
Well, I had a question on Section 1, but I think Mr. Michael raises a good point, and Mr. Michael or Representative Winchesky or the department, I mean, could we change that word assessed to paid penalties or something? I share Mr. Michael's, I think his observation is interesting. The department could assess penalties in excess of $1,000, and the tax preparer may not have agreed to those penalties at this point, and at least as I read this language, and I hear what you're saying, Mr. Haugen, that maybe there's other places that wouldn't allow that name to go public at that point, but if the due process issues haven't been finalized, haven't been resolved, I mean, if they haven't agreed to a payment or they haven't been adjudicated through the administrative process and assessed that penalty finally, I guess I have some concern about that.
Mr. Hagan.
Madam Chair, Representative Polk, we would agree. If I'm incorrect and that there isn't anything further in that section that would more or less say that they didn't exhaust their due process rights before we published, then we would agree, you know, we would definitely agree with you that should be part of the language of the bill.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe Representative Winchesky, I'm not looking to pull this piece out or anything. If we can work on it between now and wherever Ways and Means, or I'm not on Ways and Means, but I mean, if there's a way to clean that up to make sure that what we're dealing with is somebody who actually has been adjudicated or finally found to owe that amount of money, $1,000 or more, or has agreed to pay $1,000 or more to the department, then I think, I don't have a problem with that provision.
Representative Winchesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, listening to Representative Solberg and Representative Coles and Mr. Michael's comments, I think the safer way, again, members, we're hearing this bill at the courtesy of the department and to the governor, and I've tried to state repeatedly that any concerns we should just take out, because we really want this to be the non-controversial stuff that the revenue department is looking at. So I'm going to add, if this is all right with Representative Coles, to the amendment I'll be doing, we're going to just delete this section. And if we want it, then we can get it right and bring it back in Ways and Means, because I think it's right. We don't want to do it hastily.
All right. We have a couple other people here.
Madam Chair, can I just follow up on section one? I was just hoping the department could explain why it's taken the position that it shouldn't honor a lien notice or garnishment and hasn't been willing to honor those in the past. I mean, you told me that by administrative practice you've been denying them and relying on your sovereign immunity. Can you explain to me the rationale behind that?
Representative Foltz, I think, you know, the fact that, well, there's court cases saying that we don't have to honor those levies. We do have legal authority not to honor those. I think the idea that the legislature has enacted provisions where we will more or less honor a levy, which is sort of revenue recaptured, that sort of seems to indicate that we're limiting the area where we will send the refund to somebody other than the taxpayer to those areas. If we were going to do, if we were going to honor these levies for everybody, we wouldn't need revenue recaptures. 270C or is it 8? We wouldn't need that chapter at all, and we wouldn't have needed anything for assigning refunds generated by the education credit.
Representative Collins.
Thank you.
Representative Rubin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, my comments have somewhat been mooted by Representative Lincheski's willingness to take out this section too, but I just do want to comment that I think it is a good kind of consumer protection issue here that we're dealing with. But my point about that provision was just that I would hope that there would be some notice to the tax preparers, because I don't know exactly how this works with the administrative penalties, but I assume that a lot of these are settlements of some kind. And when somebody is settling something, they need to know up front what all the ramifications are going to be of that settlement. So I assume that when we come back with this a little bit reworked, that we'll have in there something about notice. Maybe there is something about notice to the tax preparer as they decide what their course of action is going to be.
Mr. Hayden?
We would probably agree with that. I guess I was wrong about my comment about it being in a subdivision further. If you look at the bottom of subdivision 2, where it says on page 108, it says, for the purposes of this section, the taxpayers are not subject to publication yet. And then 2 is, an appeal period to contest the penalty has not expired, which would indicate that we aren't going to put them on the list until we have their, more or less, their day.
All right. Representative Mallory?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lincheski, I think you may be looking into the same problem with continuing with some of these in the bill, but I just wanted to let you know I've been approached by several people who think that they're very upset about the civil penalties in this and think it should go to my committee, so you may have an extra stop if you keep these civil penalties in. And there's quite a bit of concern about it, so I'm not sure that how it'll do.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And are you referencing particularly Article 5, Section 2? Because I am going to move to delete
actually,
that. If there's another part in the bill, we should probably know what that is.
This was, it was other parts mentioned, and I just heard about this also. So I'd like a list of, if you're going to keep civil penalties, I'd like to get a list of those so that we see whether it has to come here and what the feeling is of some of the other members on that.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you. I know you came in a little bit late, but I want to say again that we do want to take out anything that's controversial for any member. So if you can, before we vote, maybe tell us what sections in particular you're interested in holding out, that would be helpful.
Representative Mallory.
Madam Chair and Representative Lincheski, when do you intend to vote? In other words, I know that there was one that several people came on concern about a seniors one. I can't remember all of the. They mentioned some others. And
Representative Lincheski?
Well, you know, I think it's the will of the group. Do members feel ready to vote, or do we want to come back and have a clarification again of all the things we're pulling out? Some of the ones you just mentioned, Representative Mallory, I am taking out in another amendment, so I don't know how comfortable people are, you know, wanting to vote. Again, this is really for the department. He's generally, you know, this is a courtesy to the governor, and I don't know where how members want to pursue this. Thoughts?
Wait, hang on. I think Representative Broad was first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Lincheski, I guess my suggestion would be that we do move this one along. You know, Representative Mullery, we had a bill on the House floor just the other day that we thought should go to your committee, and you didn't want to see that one. And this seems like there already are penalties in the bill, and I think we should just move this one along.
All right. Representative Rucavina?
Well, Madam Chair, members, I'd be more than happy to offer an amendment to remove every penalty out of here, because libertarian streak of me, then it wouldn't have to go to Representative Mullery's committee, and we should just, you know, slap people on the hands, because we're going to need to conserve our money for the Buck Brigade when we're making sure that they're not smoking in all those little bars out there in the country. So I would make that motion if Representative Lincheski would consider that a friendly.
I apologize, Madam
Representative Lincheski.
I think I missed it because I'm actually asking Ms. Baker and looking at Mr. Michael. I think the sections Representative Mullery is concerned about are Article 1, 6, 7, and 9. I'm trying to get some clarification to see if we can get those out quickly. But so while doing that, Representative Rukavina, what did you want to add?
I just asked you, Representative Lincheski, if I made a motion to remove all the penalties in the bill, if you'd consider that a friendly motion.
Representative Lincheski.
You're kind of getting that libertarian.
I think so. I don't know where they all are, though, in the sections. That's the problem, and I think it's really the department bill. And if they can help us figure out where that is. I mean, I think we've got the Article 5, Section 2 coming out, and we're looking at Articles 1, 6, 7, and 9. But beyond that, I am unaware if there are other penalty provisions, and maybe someone in the department have the answer.
All
right, thank you.
Article 2, Sections 3 and 4.
You know, members, maybe it's helpful, Madam Chair. You know, we do want the Department of Revenue to be able to have penalties for people who don't pay taxes. I think, you know, we don't want to throw out the whole concept of tax compliance today, I guess. So I understand the concern. I'm just trying to depoliticize a non-political bill, and if it just gets so complicated that we can't do it, then maybe it's just a part of the ominous tax bill. I guess, you know, one thing in thinking about this bill here today, members, is that basically it provides the opportunity for the Department of Revenue, with the work of the governor's office, the House research staff and the Senate research staff to kind of offload 100 or 150 pages of the omnibus tax bill in the House and Senate that are not the provisions that most members care about, that are not controversial, and that take up a lot of time in the tax conference committee if they're not taken care of first. And generally, it's been the practice under previous chairs that I've served under to try to do that when they can do that. So that's kind of what the goal is here today. However, I think watching the conformity, the federal conformity bill that Representative Wolfschlager carried through, we thought that would be a little quicker process than it actually was. So I'm not, I'll be honest, I don't know how likely I think it is that we could actually get all this work done for the Department of Revenue and the governor's office and the staff, so that it's not getting addressed during the tax conference committee. I think it's a good goal. I don't know, honestly, how far this will move in the Senate, and have met with Senator Bach on it with Commissioner Innes. And so we are all trying to, myself, Senator Bach, and Commissioner Innes, work collectively to see if we can just get the housekeeping parts of the tax thing taken care of. I can't predict whether we'll actually make it. But that's sort of the goal of what we're trying to do here. So, if the will of the tax committee is, we just don't want to try to get that done, we can just not proceed. But I do think it's very helpful for staff who have to sort of dual track all the stuff that's happening in the public's eye in the tax conference committee process and all the real work on all these small provisions, and to the extent we can offload it and get some things moving today, I think it's helpful, but maybe it's just too complicated here. So do other members have...
All right, there's a number of people that want to jump in here. Representative Zellers?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lucheski. To taking out the civil penalties, there's been talk of banking $300 million to $1 billion in tax compliance for spending items, and if we're going to take out some of the penalties, I guess we need to know where that money is going to come from for all these spending items or property tax relief, whatever it was going to be. That the number between $300 million and $1 billion of tax compliance, well, if we take out all these penalties, I'm assuming that some of that money will come out with it. And I guess the confusing part, I suppose, is that some of these are existing penalties, some of them are new. If this is existing and we're going to now take it out, my thinking that would be then we're taking money out of the state coffers for collecting these penalties, or things we're planning on collecting. And if this is a conformity bill to move along so that we don't have a bill this big, it's only this big, let's move it along. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lucheski. First of all, with regard to Representative Zellers, I don't think that the new penalties in this bill are anywhere near $300 million, I would guess. I think we're just, and all we're doing is not taking them out. We're just saying we want to discuss them and not rush them through. I'd like to say to Representative Broad, it's news to me that I said that I didn't want it in my committee, because I was never asked that on the other bill with regard to the Great Lakes. Nobody ever asked that, and I never looked into it as to whether it should be, so I couldn't give you an answer on that. But right offhand, Representative Lucheski, I see Section 9 of Article 1, a tax preparer failing to include preparer number. That concerns me a lot, because you have a preparer number from the IRS that apparently, I'm told, stays with you for life. Now, if you prepared a return, or I think it's 5 returns and you have to get a preparer number, if you had a preparer number 40 years ago and you forgot about that and you do one return now, you would be guilty of this, and guilty of you'd have to have a penalty because you either forgot that you had a number, didn't realize that it stays with you for life or whatever. So I think that's just offhand, trying to go through here real quick. I don't know why we can't take up penalties later. And I'm not saying we shouldn't include some of them. I just think they need more discussion.
Okay. Representative Lucheski, to that point.
That one, I think, Representative Mullery and Madam Chair, is that we've got that one addressed, and Ms. Baker has drafted to remove in Article 1, Sections 6, 7, and 9. So I think that one would come out.
And then on page 21 through 22 of the bill, delete section 3. And I don't know if others have found...
I'm sorry, which was
21
and
22?
I'm sorry, what?
Wait, just hang on. There's a number of people that want to jump in here, I guess, to this point. Representative Solberg.
Repeat what you said. Page 21, was it?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, page 21 of the bill and page 22 is delete, we would delete section 3. There's another penalty in that provision. I don't know if anyone's found other penalty provisions.
That was already taken off by the previous.
All right. Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winchesky, I think you have been very accommodating to members' concerns about individual provisions here, and I appreciate just pulling it out to try and keep this bill clean so it can move forward. I sure hope that we can pass this and move it out now. Having been involved in the conference committee process, the more issues we can avoid going into that final tax bill conference committee, the better off both sides of the aisle will be. And so, please, let's move this thing forward today.
All right. Well, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got three really fine children that generally do the right thing, but it's nice to have a penalty every once in a while, too, if they don't. The point that I wanted to make is I certainly recognize and value Chair Mullery's desire to see new penalties, different penalties, if there's going to be new approaches to some of these. But my recollection of past tax bills is both the Tekel bill and then the overall tax bill, is if there is a brand new kind of approach to penalizing people, obviously it's got to make a visit to public safety. If it's the kind of thing that we've always done, then I think the custom and usage in our body is that it doesn't. And my suggestion would be kind of along the order of what you're doing here, that kind of the new ones, you're pulling out of the technical bill so that this can travel on without having to make a visit. The goal is not to start new penalties or different approaches to penalizing people for failure to comply. As long as we've done that, I think the rest of the penalties ought to be fine. And we just follow the custom and usage of the House, refer it on to, where is it, next stop, Ways and Means? And do that, and I give great deference to Chair Mullery. If he disagrees with that, then so be it. But if they're the typical penalties that have always been in law, my suggestion would be to have it follow its normal course. If they're new and different, take them out, because they ought not to be in the technical bill. We'll put them in the regular bill and send that off to the Public Safety Committee. Well, that's, and Representative Mullery just whispered out, do we really want the tax bill? I don't think you do, and it's never gone there before, but if there's some really unusual approach, and I haven't seen anything really unusual come out of the tax, out of our revenue folks in a very long time, if there is, then it ought to go there. I'm not saying you're not creative. I'm just saying you guys, you're not coming up with cruel and unusual punishments.
But attorneys,
we do that. That's our job. But that would be my recommendation. If once we get those out of the unique ones, take them out, then send it on its normal course. Thank you, Mr.
All right.
Chair.
Hang on here, Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree with Representative Atkins and Lanning. I think these provisions are doing what Representative Atkins just said. I guess I'd ask either Mr. Manson or Mr. Michael to confirm that we're removing the new ones, but we're not trying to stop the Department of Revenue from using penalties. So I just, if either Mr. Manson or Mr. Michael could tell us if we've got this right yet.
Madam Chair, Jack Manson with the Department of Revenue, and I think this amendment will remove just the new penalties, but just these are civil penalties, and generally the history has been that civil penalties in the department bill have gone on their own without going to judiciary or whatever. It's criminal penalties that have gone that route, but it's not that can't be changed, but I just thought I'd mention that as well.
Right. Representative Solberg, you have had your hand up. Just hang on, Representative Rufino.
Just trying to follow orders here. Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, thank you. Let me express my concern on a couple of things. Was I raised in Article 5, Section 2, wasn't necessarily the penalty, because I think the penalty is already in place. Mm-hmm. My concern there was posting it on the Internet without due process of some kind. And I, if we can express, as Representative Coles probably expressed the same type of thing, you know, making sure that it's, you've gone through the due process before it's posted. I'm comfortable with that, but I want due process to be involved, and not just have the department post someone's name on and ruin their reputation without the due process being in place. The second second concern that I've expressed earlier, and you may take them out or not take them out, but I think everybody was a little shocked when we heard testimony at the department. I asked how much it raised, and they said zero, because they assume everyone's going to follow the law. And I'm still waiting then for the report of how much fees come in dealing with the fiscal staff that I deal with, and asking it to come to Ways and Means. It was because of that particular provision. We don't know how much it is raised. We want to know that before it goes. And quite frankly, it's a little bit unclear whether or not it's deposited in the general fund or not, or if it stays in the department. They're doing research on that as well. And I think the indication is that it's deposited in the general fund. But I want my staff to be, the fiscal staff, the nonpartisan fiscal staff, to be comfortable with that. I don't care if you leave them in there. If you take them out, then I don't think there's any reason to go to Ways and Means, because there probably isn't any particular fiscal need for it. Then it becomes a technical bill. I want to clarify that there's two different concerns, and one of them was due process, and the other one is I want to know how much is being raised. And I think for the department to say, well, we impose a fee, but we count zero for the raising of it is not correct. I mean, obviously, you raise some money in a fee when you impose it.
Madam Chair, thank you, and Representative Solberg, we are gathering that information for you. And one thing that's a little problematic for us is we have an easier feel for what's assessed, but it's a little hard to tell what's actually collected, because some of those penalties are abated down the road. Others are just become uncollectible debt, along with some other debt, because once you get to a penalty point, it gets a little harder to. Harder cases and tougher to collect. So we're trying to get at what's actually collected. I don't think it's all that much money, but generally I think if we do have a fee in the bill, then we do kind of score that as opposed to a penalty. Your comment on Article 5, Section 2 on the publication, and we talked a little bit about that. It's, you know, it's the penalty has to be assessed. Over $1,000 has to actually stick, and it has to be at a point where it's not being appealed, not being challenged in tax court anymore. So we share the same current concerns you do. I don't want to publicize an individual either that's not being penalized. And it does get a little, if you stick to criminal penalties and publish those, it's a little more clear-cut than when you get into more civil and administrative penalties. And we realize that this is kind of being, we're bringing this forward, not only because we think it's good policy, but as Chairman Lanchesky also pointed out, that it's really being supported heavily by legal aid folks and the CPA Society as well. So they have some concern about, you know, integrity of their profession as well. So, but, you know, it could be controversial, I admit that.
Representative Solberg, I cut you off earlier, so now I'm a little reticent to do that again. Do you have another comment?
No, but I do want to ask a question of Mr. Michael then on the Section 2 of Article 5. And we can probably, I thought we were going down the road of having some kind of a different word in there, an additional modifier in there for the assessed, that would give some additional comfort in addition to B1, 2, and 3.
Representative Solberg, my notes are that we took that out. But, Mr. Michael?
Well, not for that.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, members of the committee, you haven't taken any formal action yet. I agree with the department's analysis that in reading paragraph B that it, you know, that these penalties have to, the period has to have expired. I think you could change the language slightly to eliminate that, just assess and make it clearer, so it could be something like delete assess and insert who have penalties in excess, you know, and then the language that is there would continue, and at the very end before the period insert finally impose, which would eliminate this sort of implication that the assessment alone is sufficient, although it's not, I think given that the appeal period has to have expired, I don't know that it really, that the concern that I raised is really legitimate anyway.
Madam Chair, as I read the whole thing, I would agree with Mr. Michael that my concerns have been eased on that.
All right. We have a couple more people that want to weigh in here. Representative Rukavina?
No,
you're done? All right. Representative Mulroy?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm scared of you, Madam Chair.
Are you scared? Good. Sorry.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to note, just since Representative Yadkin stated his view and Representative Lencheski agreed with him, I would very definitely take the opposite position on what goes to the committee, because if you change the, if you have four things included in manslaughter right now and you put a new fifth one in, that would still go to our committee, and what he was saying would say that it can't come to our committee because the penalty is still the same. Obviously, that's not the intent, and I was not even saying that I was taking a position to have to go there. It was actually other people who have been around here quite a while who suggested it go to our committee, and I think maybe everything's being taken out, hopefully, so that it won't be an issue.
Right. Mr. Manson?
Madam Chair and Representative Mullery, that's my understanding. The amendment that's being drafted here would take out all the new penalties and the more controversial publication of repairs as well.
All right. Representative Earhart has been trying to get in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if anybody's got any bills that we can send to Representative Mullery's committee. Let's keep them busy on some other things there.
All right. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in the Article 5, Section 2 piece, I think the best way, even though it sounds like Representative Solberg and Mr. Michael maybe worked something out there, I'm kind of looking at Representative Liebling and Coles, who've also raised questions. Your thumbs up. You know, we can just take it out if it's easier. How about Representative Liebling? I don't know how you're feeling about it now. On that piece, it looks like Representative Coles and Representative Solberg are okay with the language Mr. Michael is proposing. And if,
Madam Chair, I'm okay with the way it is as I read the whole thing. I'm comfortable with it.
All right.
And Representative Solberg and I so often agree.
Well, then, Madam Chair, if I may, and I you know, I'm going to write this down, that Representative Coles and Representative Solberg have worked together to get this thing worked out. Hearing that, what I've asked is Ms. Baker and Mr. Michael have now got the grand list of the second author's amendment to remove, remember yesterday we removed a lot of provisions that we knew were controversial. Today we're going to try to remove all the provisions that have been raised right now, and that includes all the penalty issues for Representative Mullery, and if I'm understanding Representative Solberg correctly, that also makes the bill not need to go to Ways and Means. It removes the financial piece. I also have in the amendment the removal of the date of birth that Representative DeLaForest talked to me about it after, Representative Liebling. We have the Green Acres provisions coming out that some people were concerned about. And we have, before Representative Mullery came to the room, we discussed this concept of the property tax refund and how that works. We're pulling that out too. So if members are okay with this, because it looks like everyone's waiting around to vote, I think that the best thing would be to have Mr. Michael have everybody go through the amendment now for everybody to understand what we're actually going to do in the amendment. You have the amendment in your folder, but we have now added 4 or 5 pieces to that, and we've sort of herded it all up to Mr. Michael. So I think the best way, Madam Chair, is to have him walk the committee through the author's amendment and see if we're ready then to add that in and vote the bill out.
You know, I just could we quiet down just a little bit. Mr. Michael, please proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just to go through, I don't know if it's necessary. Well, why don't I go through the existing amendment that's printed and is in your folders, plus the additions of these new provisions. First, on the printed amendment, line 1.2, that deletes the birth date requirement on the income tax return. Then we're going to insert 5 new lines after that that delete penalty provisions. Page 7, delete section 6, and then page 8, delete section 7. Page 10, delete section 9. These are the penalties that were being added in the income tax for the partners and shareholders, negligence in preparing property tax refunds, and the requirement for preparers to include their identification number on the return. Page 21, delete section 3. This is the provision that would subject failure to pay local use tax to the penalty that now applies to local sales tax. Page 49, delete section 8. This is the change that lowers the threshold for the amount of tobacco products that are permitted to be brought into the state without being subject to tax, and they're implicitly a penalty. Returning now to the printed amendment, on page 52, delete section 1. This is the wheelage tax provision that the department was attempting to coordinate the relation between the property tax levy and the wheelage tax, and that is just being deleted because that'll be dealt with in the big bill. Line 4 of the printed amendment corrects the cross-reference. Line 5 reinstates a provision of the Green Acres provision of the Green Acres law relating to essentially bringing properties back onto the regular tax roll and how they pay back taxes. I think the department thought this was obsolete, but Dakota County has communicated with us that they are still using it, so we need to look more at that, and we'll deal with that in the omnibus bill process. On lines 6 through 9 of the printed amendment, this deletes a provision that was in the department's bill that would require a 40-acre minimum to qualify for the special homestead farm and the relative farm homestead. This is, since this is a sort of a more of a significant policy change and could result in some taxpayers who currently have homestead farm treatment losing that, that's being taken out to be considered with the overall farm changes that the division and the committee will consider. Now, additions that are not on the printed amendment on page 103, line 56, delete section 56. This is the provision that is the senior deferral change that was noted before about life estates and contract for deed not qualifying for that program, we'll look at whether or not there may be another way to guarantee the state's priority and allow those people to participate as an alternative to this. And then finally, page 108, delete section 2, that's the tax preparer publication provision that you've just discussed. So those are the changes that are in the amendment.
Representative Solberg.
I'm sure that's in the amendment. I think we were all comfortable with keeping in 108, page 108, section 2, as a consumer protection. But I think we've discussed that, and it's been decided that at least I'm comfortable with it. Everyone seems to be okay. So,
Madam Chair, then, if I may, and Representative Solberg, looking at Representative Liebling, who was the third who raised the issue. She's nodding, so I think if we could, Mr. Michael, then we'll strike that last page 108 delete section 2. We'll leave it in. And again, if there's a concern, please, we can always do an author's amendment on the floor if people rethink that a little bit. And so then if I may, Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Lanchesky?
I would
like to renew.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I need a second here. I guess there's one more provision we weren't aware of. Madam Chair, if I may, I'm going to have Mr. Michael give us the page and line here. There is the issue of the bovine credit testing. I know some of our Greater Minnesota members are aware of this provision, and we gave a credit in the income tax, if I understand it correctly, for farmers who are doing bovine testing. The federal government, not sure I'm getting this all right, but this is just my recollection, the federal government, I think, stopped requiring bovine testing. Therefore, we as the state probably don't want to give people a credit for something they don't have to do. And I think we're trying to get the correct language here for the revenue to be able to work on this provision. So, Madam Chair, if Mr. Michael wants to comment further.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are two changes, and this simply clarifies a situation in which the federal government no longer would require bovine testing as to how this credit would apply in those circumstances. And the changes are, if you look on page 15 of the bill, line 26, where the word after would be deleted, and instead it would insert in which. And then on line 27, the words no longer would be deleted, and the word not would be inserted. So it would read, expenses incurred in a calendar year in which tuberculosis testing of cattle in Minnesota is not federally required are not allowed in claiming the credit under paragraph A. And that just clarifies that this would be allowed in other years. And have any questions?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Michael. Representative Lanchesky, are you ready to...
I am, Madam Chair. And I do want to, first of all, I do want to thank you, Madam Chair, and all the committee members. These are the difficult, small provisions that are very time-consuming for staff. And I think we're always all very impressed when we notice the staff, whether it's House Research or Department of Revenue here, continually finding every little piece of work in here to make our tax code work better. And I do think it's important to get this moving. I want to thank Representative Solberg for working with me to find a way to put this together that we really don't need to get to Ways and Means. And we're going to hope the Senate is going to work just as hard as we have here today. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to move then the H0496A1 amendment as amended, as you heard Mr. Michael read it to us.
All right. Mr. Michael, did I understand you correctly, Mr. Michael, you're reading it? No. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Woo-hoo! Sorry. amendment passes. Representative Lincheski?
Yes.
Would you like to move your bill?
And Madam Chair, I'd like to amend my motion to now move the House File 496 as amended to pass to the floor.
All right. Those in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Appreciate the department and the governor's office. Appreciate your work today. Thank you.
Just have one item of business here. We have to Representative Solberg, would you like to move the minutes?
You notice on that there is a fiscal note on this one, and it says negligible. In doing some checking on it, we found out that it's 5,000 plus in one section and 5,000 minus in another section. So negligible ends up to be a dollar or two. So that's why it's avoiding ways and means now that there's no fees in it. And I'll right. move the minutes.
All right. All those in favor? Aye. Meeting adjourned.
Pause.